Okay, at the end of Perek Yud Tet in Sefer Yehoshua, again page 499 in this book, we see that all the different tribes have been given land, and as we pointed out, the tribes of Yehudah and Yosef had more central land, more prominent land, more vast lands, and we also talked about the people on the other side of the Jordan River, and we made a specific point about Binyamin. We touched a little bit about Yisachar and Zebulun yesterday, and the rest of the people sort of fall suit. Asher, Naphtali, and Dan. And okay, they each have their little pieces and plots. The Torah points out what's there. The Pesukim point out what's there, and so be it. On Pasuk 49, on page 499, it says as follows. Somebody had asked me this question beforehand, so this is a very nice summary pasuk. They completed. Now here's the interesting. 499, pasuk 49. After they had completed divvying up the land, allotting the land to people, as the translation has here, according to its boundaries, Bnei Yisrael turned around and said to Yehoshua, here, you can have something also. Right, which is very interesting. Right? According to what Hashem said, that's what they gave him. They gave him a city called Timnat Serach, which was in the mountains of Ephraim. And he built a city there, and he dwelled in it. Now, it's very interesting, because think about how this worked. Right? How long have we been talking about? We talked about Yehuda, we talked about Yosef, who, by the way, Yehoshua is a part of. We talked about Binyamin, we talked about the other tribes. Everyone's getting their piece of land. And in the beginning, I think, Nathan, you were the one who asked me, what about Yehoshua? What does he get? Right? And when do we finally see what he gets? And when does he finally see what he gets? And when does he finally get it? At the end. After everybody else gets it. And not in grand style, and not necessarily something that was, not necessarily something...
It was given to him by...
By the people and Hashem. And not necessarily something that is prominent or becomes a major place in the future. In fact, to my knowledge, the only thing we know about it is it was given to Yehoshua and it was his.
And what do you think that, Rabbi?
I think this shows us a very interesting thing. And we could again borrow from today's business world and what goes on to understand. Today, when you're a CEO or a leader, right, what ends up happening is you take your perks first. You make sure you get your private jet and your... Yeah. Golden parachute, and your stock options, and then we'll worry about everybody else. Right? And this is not only in today's CEO age, it's really across the board in a lot of places. And what Yehoshua shows us here, and again, we've seen Yehoshua, and we've liked his leadership, here he really shows you the key to what's there, is he doesn't think me first. He thinks me last. And he's not looking for Jerusalem, and he's not looking for Hebron, and he's not looking to say, hey, yeah, you guys could all get yours, but after I get mine. All right, that's not the way he thinks at all. It's not what he does. He's already at the end of his life. He's looking for something that's a little bit comfortable. It's a place where he could retire, but that's not a terrible thing.
Why not a legacy for his family? Why not?
It's a little bit of a legacy for his family, but it's not, again, it's not something that Yehoshua says, give me payback for what I did. He
really
is not, we don't see so much spirituality from Yehoshua.
Okay, but isn't it that he doesn't get a material item?
He gets a material item.
But not doesn't matter to him, he's saying.
Right. In other words, he gets what the basic necessity of what he needs. He gets a place, a city, and that's it. He's not looking for the corner penthouse. He's not looking for the...
But we're discussing the Bible, so we would assume that would be it, right? Or
what?
That he'll take at the end. not like it, well, not like in the corporate
but
world.
But that's why the Bible shows us.
Yeah, it shows how wealthy Abraham was and Yaakov was.
By the way, and we're going to see it's not always the case. We're going to see that there's certain people actually do for themselves before they do for the others. Right? There are people that do that. Okay. There are people that do for themselves before others. And okay, that's not Yehoshua's way. Yehoshua is an outstanding leader, primarily because he learned from Moshe and what Moshe expected of him and wanted from him in the beginning, which was let him be a person that watches over the people, that takes care of them and their needs before him and his needs. It was specifically what Moshe asked for when he asked for someone to take over for him, and he got that in Yehoshua, presumably because he trained him to be that way. But he lived his life that way, which is not so easy. Many, many people use leadership to take their perks first, and then I'll worry about everything else.
You could say a Warren Buffett today or a Bill Gates today is Yehoshua. Like, they're worth $50 billion. They leave it all philanthropically. Most of their money is left to.
Could be. I don't know that much about them, but things that I know that I've heard about Bill Gates flying coach, you know, but I'm talking about even as they're going, how do they run their show? I think, you know, I don't know much about Warren Buffett, but the guy lives in Omaha, right? He's not living in New York City. He's not, you know, he could buy whatever he wants.
I'm just trying to say, like, Gates left his personal fortune
To charity.
Yeah, right. He lives in a house in Seattle that's the biggest house in the world.
Right.
Okay, but he left everything to the people for charity.
Right.
Buffett did the same thing. They took all their money and left it for philanthropic causes.
Right.
They're not broke.
No, definitely
they
not.
They
gave much, much more than they took. They gave amazing. Much more than they took. I mean, I have a little bit of issue with the fact that they decided, which again you could argue with, but I'm not arguing with what they did, but that they decided I'm going to make as much as possible, not give anything until I'm dead, which is kind of what they had done for a while. I don't know how it's all worked out now, but some people have had issue with that. Of okay, listen, you know, we need some now, you know, and you've got plenty, and you aren't going to use it all, and okay. Whatever, but that's a small detail
in
the scope of it.
Or is it wrong?
Which part?
By
I'm working
either,
hard
either hoarding it or giving it.
I think hoarding it is wrong. I think hoarding it is not what we're here to do. Nobody makes anyone who makes money didn't do it by themselves. No matter how self-made, self-whatever, you know, I think it's Mark Twain has a very famous quote. He says, the self-made man is as likely as the self-laid egg, right? Nobody makes whatever it is of themselves without a lot of other people on a lot of other levels. So you need, you know, you need everybody else. And you, whatever berachot we have, are always built on other people. Like, for example, let's say a person has a very, very successful business, and he worked hard, and he made the right decisions, and he took the right risks, and all true, very nice. But bottom line, right? If his customers don't buy, right, then he's got nothing. So he needs some level of welfare for his customers. Otherwise, he's nowhere, right? And that's true about any success that you're going to do. That's not even counting the people who advised him, the people who gave him help, the people, whatever, which always is the case as well. So a person needs to realize those things. And if a person hoards it, a person says, "All mine, I made it. You know, I did it. Great. You know, we don't look too positively about that." There's a great story about that. I think it was one of the Reichmans everybody Sox. Knows who the Reichmans are, the Sox, right? Yeah, you know he was a very religious man, gave a lot of tzedakah, was very powerful, was somewhat forceful in how he lived his life and how he used his money, and I think that he's known for that. So when he passed away, he left as part of the will that he'd be buried with his special socks on. Right? And they went to the rabbis. Rabbi, you know, what's the story here? The guy, you know, he want socks, but you're not allowed to have socks. And but he's Reichman, you know, it's money. It's, you know, the rabbis said, I don't know. No, they didn't let him. And he had left a second part of the will to be opened 30 days later. And they bury him, no socks. 30 days later, they open up the will. He says, you see, he says, I did this so that you see that no matter who you are, you can't even take your socks with you. Right? You know, so I mean, it really hits you. I mean, you know, and it hits you for a few reasons. Because number one, most of us think we're going to live forever. You know, nobody really thinks that they're going to die. Everyone thinks, if you're hoarding, you think you're not going to die. Because if you realize that just like everybody else, one day you're going to be food for the worms, as the Mishnah teaches us. So what are you hoarding? What are you here for? You know, that's really what it is. So a person has to realize that what they have is not really theirs. And we've spoken about this before. The Torah differentiates between ownership and possession. Nobody owns anything. We just possess it. And the difference between ownership and possession is how we view what we have. If we realize that Hashem put whatever it is that we have, my house, my car, my bank account, my health, my clothing, my family, it's all in my possession. And that means I have to safeguard it, I have to pass it on, I have to make it better, I have to be able to turn around to somebody and say, see, I took care of it. And of course, that's to Hashem. Ownership is, it's mine, I do whatever I want. I want to burn it, I want to light a fire to it, go ahead. You want to light a fire to your money? Go ahead. You want to light a fire to your life? Go ahead. Right, but we don't view things that way. That's the hoarding mentality, and that's why as rational as it seems, what to say, I made it. I could do whatever I want with it, right? It's really not so rational. It's crazy, that's we see Yehoshua live that life. Again, a man who was powerful, successful, seems like he didn't have to answer to anyone, seems like he could have taken whatever he wanted. Think about what he's doing. He's allotting a country, right? So, you're allotting a country. Who's going to argue? Think about all the finagling that could have gone on, right? You get this, I get that, and you're in charge, right? Think about how that would happen today, right? Think about how this, you know, think about all the backroom deals that could have happened, and none happened, right? Yehoshua waited till the end, and they gave it to him according to Hashem, and he said, and he walked away.
What was next in line to Yehoshua?
That's the rest of the book, and it's part of the problem that we're going to see. It's the one thing that Yehoshua, we have to decide if it did well or not, and what he was trying to do. We didn't get to that yet, but so far we've seen nothing of that. So far we've seen nothing of that, although there might have been a hint, and we're gonna pick up on that thread at some point in the near future. And then it says, "Ele hanahalot asher nihalu Elazar Kohen v'Yoshua Benun v'Rashi Avot l'matot b'nei Yisrael b'goral b'shilo lefnei Elonai petach ohel moed v'yahalu mechalek et ha'aretz." And that's the end. The last bit was that Yehoshua got his peace, and everything now is settled. The rest of the book is going to be a discussion of, so what happened after the division of the land? What challenges were left?